All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, thank you, Don Rue. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for this Thursday, January 26th, a beautiful day on Lake Wissota, downright balmy compared to what's coming up for this weekend. That reminds me, I still owe Don lunch for recording those liners. Don and I go way back to my radio work at WAQE in Rice Lake, right after getting married in 1986. We worked together there, 86 and 87, and he's nice enough to make these little liners for me now and then, and at some point I really should pay him for that. All right, let's talk about what's on the show this morning. Senator Tammy Baldwin will join us live to talk about her efforts to improve mental health care access in Wisconsin. Her work was recognized by Governor Tony Evers in Tuesday night's State of the State address. Both Senator Baldwin and Dr. Kristen Lierley will also talk about the ongoing fight to restore women's health care rights. It's Thursday, so Dr. Lierley sticks around for Hometown Health and introduces us to Timothy Johnson, a certified registered nurse anesthetist, on how CRNAs contribute to Hometown Health. And we'll talk to Democratic strategist Melissa Baldoff, reviewing Governor Evers' new mental health proposals, and try to make sense of Republican opposition to helping people in crisis because, you know, God forbid we help the most vulnerable among us when, you know, you can cut taxes for the rich instead, you know. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. The phone number here, 715-388-7155 or 844-967-2789. Aaron Zomers is manning the phones 200 miles away from here, not on Lake Wissota, but are you closer to Lake Mendota or Lake Monona? You're not near either one, but you're kind of equidistant, aren't you?
I think so. I have no idea. Because I feel like, aren't they separated by a road?
An isthmus.
Yeah, isthmus. That's true. But then I'm probably equidistant or at least close enough.
Okay. So you got a couple of lakes there, but I will say my preference is still for Wissota here, even though it's frozen over and the ice is going to get even thicker over the weekend. Looking at some of the forecasts for this weekend, up in Hayward on Saturday and Sunday nights, they're going to get to 15 below. And on Sunday and Monday, the highs might reach zero. Amory is going to get to minus 10. Both nights, single digits in many other places around the state, even if you don't plunge that far below zero. So bundle up, get ready to do all the things that you haven't had to do for some time. And you might have to change your routine in some way, shape, or form. For example, some of us like to keep our 12 packs of pop or soda, whichever side of the state you're from, maybe leave them, you know, just tucked inside the garage. It's a nice little, refrigerator there. Unless it becomes deep freezer. What's that?
We do that all year round.
Well, I do it all year round unless the temperature is going to get to 15 below, because even then, nestled up against the house inside the garage, it's still sometimes enough to lead to problems, shall we say. I was asking Aaron just before the show, because I've got to think he's more of a movie watcher than I am. But the Academy Award nominations came out this week, and as I've been listening to the chatter about it, I know that some people are happy that Top Gun Maverick got nominated for Best Picture because, you know, they can't all be art house films. Sometimes films that make money, you know, have to be recognized for how good they are. But boy, there's a lot of blowback to this one called Everything Everywhere All at Once. And you tell me you've seen it. So where do you come down, when it comes to the critics who were surprised to come nominated and called the film a great big mess?
Did they? Interesting. I think.
Now, remember, I haven't seen it, so I'm just passing along the, you know, people who weren't happy about it being nominated. They basically overrated is what they're saying.
Right. I can understand that. It certainly is messy, but that's part of it's intentionally messy because there's just a lot going on, as the name would suggest. But ultimately, a lot of the message of the movie is that we can't always fight everything that's going to happen, but what we can do is be kind. And It's also a very funny movie, but I liked it a lot.
Okay, so you're saying there's funny moments in it, because if it's just all, you know, fighting and conflict, I'd rather listen to you say, you know, that what you just said about a good philosophy of life. And then there were a lot of people upset that the Jordan Peele movie Nope basically got shut out. Now, you have not seen Nope, but I know that raised a lot of hackles with folks.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've definitely heard good things. And while people are happy that a lot of Asian people got representation this year with Everything Everywhere All at Once, mm-hmm. unfortunately, it was at the expense of basically anyone else.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds, you know, this time of year as well is when you find out who got elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, if anybody. And Scott Rolen got elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame and nobody else this year, which is going to, some of you are going to react the way that I do. And I'm a baseball fan. And I go, Scott Rolen? I barely know the name Scott Rolen. He's had a long career, but this is, as other people describe it, you know, is it the Hall of Fame or is it the Hall of, you know, people you've heard of, people who stuck around for a long time? So not every year can the Hall of Fame get the best of the very best, and not every year can the Oscars get the best of the very best. So like you said, we can't fight all the battles. We just have to accept what we've got and love one another. How's that for tying a bow on it?
There we go.
Just, you know, and go see a movie later. Doesn't matter which one. We'll have more headlines after this on Up North News Radio. Thursday morning on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and we have Senator Tammy Baldwin coming up in our next hour. Dr. Kristen Lierley coming up a little later this hour. The Milwaukee Bucks beat Denver 107-99. Giannis had 33 points, 14 rebounds as the Bucks beat the Nuggets, but the Nuggets were also playing without four of their regular starters. The Bucks will be at Indiana on Friday. The Badger men's basketball team has now lost five of their last six after losing at Maryland last night, 73-55, and they will host Illinois on Saturday. Quick reminder, the $1 million ad giveaway starts today. Well, actually, it is only today. Begins at 9 o'clock is when a website opens for you to apply for your small business to get a chunk of $1 million in free radio advertising and free help from the Civic Media team creating a radio advertising campaign for your business. Go to civicmedia.us/million and get the details on a giveaway that starts this morning at 9 o'clock. And one more piece of business to take care of here. A reminder that you can always watch what we do if you can't be near a Civic Media radio station, and they are growing all over Wisconsin. But you can also watch us on the Up North News Facebook page or the Facebook page for Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau. And again, our phone line is 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. I started getting set to tell you about one story, which is new, about the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. But then after hearing a comment that was made at the board meeting, it took me to an earlier news story from several months back. And I don't know that anything could better illustrate what we're having to deal with in terms of the challenges of making sure that we don't have people in powerful positions who don't seem to give a rat's butt, you know, as far as whether the water gets polluted, whether the air gets polluted, you know, as long as business can make a buck. That seems to be that is the mentality of what we've had to fight. I mean, in this country for, you know, over 100 years, and it continues to this day. Now, the newer story, the problem that is reduced now is that the State Natural Resources Board, which regulates the Department of Natural Resources, is now in the fifth year of Governor Tony Evers' term is now has a majority of members appointed by Tony Evers. That's because one of the squatters, Fred Prehn, who was appointed by Scott Walker and stayed a year and a half past the expiration of his term, backed up by the right-wing justices on the state Supreme Court, finally left his post in December. Another Scott Walker appointee stepped down soon after that. And now Governor Evers' appointees have a majority on that board, along with a new Department of Natural Resources Secretary, Adam Payne, who presided over his first meeting and declared that his top priority will be water quality. He praised the governor for proposing $100 million more to fight PFAS contamination, those industrial chemicals, while making the State of the State address on Tuesday. But keep in mind that money is far from a sure thing. The legislature is still, you know, gerrymandered, led by Republicans who represent a minority view of Wisconsinites. They have helped to block certain water cleanliness rules in the past related to industrial chemical contamination. And there's no guarantee that they're going to be any better this time around as they go through the budget process, which is ironic given that, you know, Speaker Robin Voss actually convened a task force on clean water a couple of years back. Well, Fred Prehn, after resigning, led to fellow Republican William Bruins to quit as well. And so Evers now has a 5-2 advantage on the board. And so as a result, the Evers appointees made a change in who would be the chair of that board. So Republican appointee Greg Kazmierski was unseated by Evers appointee Bill Smith. And Kazmierski's term expires this coming May, which will give Evers an opportunity to further expand his control of the board. That will give Evers the freedom to move ahead with PFAS standards and tighten restrictions on other contaminants, things that are good for you and me, good for clean water, good for public health, not as good to the bottom line of industry. It will hurt profits if certain companies are found responsible for polluting and have to help pay for the cleanup or things like that. Right now, the legislature's Administrative Rules Committee could still be an impediment to Evers and the Natural Resources Board. It's an Administrative Rules Committee that I sat on in the legislature. It is the most powerful committee you've never heard of because it somehow has the ability as a legislative branch agency to put the brakes on almost anything the executive branch wants to do in terms of rulemaking. So even though Fred Prehn and the other Scott Walker appointees are gone or going away, it's still far from a sure thing that our natural resources are in a better position. And as evidence of that, I would point you to comments made by the outgoing board chair, Greg Kazmierski, who warned members of the Natural Resources Board after the vote that they are not accountable to the state's natural resources. They are accountable to the public. And here's Kazmierski's quote in an Associated Press story. Today, he says, there is almost a religion to the environment, and this agency and this board is not accountable to that religion. We're accountable to the people. It's wonderful to say we all want perfectly clean water, but what's it going to cost the public? We have to look into all those kinds of things and find that happy balance of what we can afford to do. Wherever you just came down on hearing that comment, I think clearly outlines the divide between, I guess, left and right in this country today, because what you're hearing there, the closest thing to moderation in that comment is happy balance. We should find the happy balance. I'm all in favor of finding balance, but everything else in that quotation tells us that happy balance is not what we're looking for. That it's, you know, when you say we're accountable to the people, you don't mean all the people. You mean the business people. You mean the people, or as you would call it, you know, the taxpayers. You know, of course, you mean the people who pay taxes because of immense wealth. There are plenty of other people in Wisconsin who would not like to see water contaminated by PFAS, industrial chemicals, high capacity wells, farm runoff, poor stormwater planning, you name it. Not to mention, you know, the impacts of a changing climate that so many people are in denial about. We are, in fact, responsible for the natural resources that were given to us and that we're going to leave to others. We do not have unlimited funds. But remember what I said yesterday about being fiscally prudent. There are folks on Kazmierski's side of the street that will tell you, well, you have to be fiscally prudent when times are tough, can't spend much money. And now that times are really good and we have a record surplus, you have to be fiscally prudent. You can't go spending a lot of money. It's all about making excuses so that the people who are far more selfish amongst us, who believe natural resources are there to use in the here and now and damn the consequences. Now, those are the folks who have had power for the past decade here in Wisconsin. And I wondered, because I'd never heard of Mr. Kazmierski before during his time chairing the Natural Resources Board, and I thought, that quote has got me curious as to what other things have been said. And it led me to an article by Kevin Wilson in the Watertown Daily Times that was written in June of last year. And it's all about Greg Kazmierski's reign as chair of the Natural Resources Board. And again, the author was Kevin Wilson, and Kevin Wilson writes that Greg Kazmierski often describes himself falsely over the past three decades, but his most recent self-titled job description tops all the previous whoppers, jaw-droppers, and knee-slappers. Kazmierski has dubbed himself the translator while speaking last April at UW-Stevens Point. Wilson is quick to remind us, he says, that throughout the 1990s and 2000s, before getting himself appointed to the Natural Resources Board in 2011 by Scott Walker, Kazmierski claimed to represent the Wisconsin Deer Hunters Coalition and its thousands of members, but he couldn't produce membership rolls, voting records, or state registered organization records to prove that his coalition was anything but in his imagination, Wilson writes, and maybe a few signatures on random petitions that he circulated. Undaunted, he writes, Kazmierski next took turns claiming to represent state chapters of the NRA, the Safari Club International, and the National Wild Turkey Federation. That was news to these groups, however, and they disavowed or distanced themselves from him. He remains unfazed, Wilson writes. In his latest role as the translator, Kazmierski tackles his biggest client yet, science itself. Yes, whether you seek insights in biology, botany, geology, sociology, or even astronomy, just call Kaz, because he calls himself the translator. Minutes into his talk at UW-Stevens Point, he said science is usually right, but that he's, quote, not real keen on models and sees some problems with models. He cites a bigger problem, however, Wilson writes. College professors can't do justice to science because they aren't good public communicators. You need to know how to speak Bubba, Kazmierski advised. I would work on your communication skills. You may be presenting information to legislators who don't know the first thing about science. It's important to communicate your point, not just scientifically, but so they understand. That's how I got on the board, to be the translator. Wilson writes, yep. Who needs Aldo Leopold or UW pointy heads to explain wildlife science when you can call on Kaz to translate everything into Bubba speak? And Wilson goes on to explain other instances where Kazmierski tells people in the audience, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and give us a call with questions. As a matter of fact, he said, I'd prefer to communicate that way. In this litigious era we live in right now with open records and all that kind of stuff, I'd rather you call. I'd rather talk one-on-one. The translation, Wilson writes, is that Kazmierski dislikes open records, open government, and public access to his communications when crafting policies that affect all of us in Wisconsin. Again, all of that coming from Kevin Wilson in an article last June in the Watertown Daily Times. Once you read all of that, Kazmierski's comment yesterday even comes further into context, where he says, again yesterday. There is almost a religion to the environment, and this agency and this board is not accountable to that religion. It's wonderful to say we all want perfectly clean water, but what's it going to cost the public? What's it going to cost the public if we just let people like Scott Walker and Greg Kaczmierski and others run roughshod over it? That's the question that's properly asked in this decade. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us next with we have Melissa Baldoff next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
So I say the following not to make light of mental health issues, but I do wonder if there is a mental health issue with politicians who are in positions of power where they can really help their constituents and their fellow man, woman in crisis, and instead they choose denial, obstruction, even outright ridicule. So for that conversation, Joe Zepecki was busy this week, so his better half, Melissa Baldoff, who also works in the business of political strategery, was kind enough to pinch hit for him during a conversation we had on Wednesday afternoon. Melissa, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
I guess when people say, well, where's Joe? What happened to Joe? Who is this person to Joe? We could go with counterpart, which is, you know, technically correct, but I liked your description better that was given to you by somebody else. You're the Beyonce to his Jay-Z.
Yeah.
I think that works perfectly. How does Joe feel about that?
He thinks it's great.
Okay. I didn't know if he got tired of the Jay-Z thing with it, those being his actual initials, but
no, he doesn't.
Why would you get tired of that comparison? I wouldn't at all.
Exactly.
Democratic strategist. So your first time being on here, what do you typically tell folks about, you know, either what you do or what you've done? What's the very quick intro to Melissa?
Sure. I usually describe myself as kind of a, you know, Democratic muckety muck. I am around and work with a number of different Democratic and independent and nonpartisan organizations. I previously spent some time working for Governor Tony Evers in the administration as Deputy Chief of Staff and ran communications of the administration. I also served a similar role in Milwaukee County under County Executive Chris Abley. I worked at the State Dem Party. So I've been around Wisconsin politics for a while, politics and government, although I am a Florida native. I've been in Wisconsin for 12 years now. So I think I can call myself a Wisconsinite.
Almost getting used to it.
I think
winter.
They'll have me.
You know that we will. Have you noticed that this is the time of year that whether Democratic or Republican, a lot of congratulatory notes are going out because people who had worked on campaigns or in offices are right about now going on board someplace else. Either they're consulting or they're joining this office or that campaign. And it's almost a, you could say, a happy time, because at first it's like people don't know what am I doing after the election, but this is like the time of, this is spring for, you know, political muckety mucks, I guess you could say.
It certainly is. And it, you know, I will say too, it's in my work these days as a consultant, I work not just in Wisconsin, but kind of all over the place. And it's really wonderful to see so many Wisconsin connections as I'm meeting folks and doing work. You know, oh, I know, you know, this person. Oh, I crossed paths with this person. Oh, this person from Wisconsin is so amazing. I was just on a call a little bit earlier this morning with somebody who asked me if I knew a Wisconsin guy, and I did. And he said, oh, we worked together in Arizona. Like, he's so amazing. And I agreed. So it was, it's always nice to see folks getting in new roles and then to see familiar faces come back around too.
Yeah, it made an impression. Just at least twice this week, I've seen names come through my email and said, oh, that's where they ended up. That's great. So, and again, you see that on both sides of the aisle. So speaking of which, let's get into business here with the governor's State of the State address, which, you know, we've talked about quite a bit about it being forward thinking and an actual specific list of things. But I'd be interested in your take on the governor's priorities, especially coming off election, you know, starting a four-year term. He's not going anyplace, so he can lay out things however he wants. What'd you think?
You know, I thought it was a really, strong message from the governor that, again, he is who he says he is, and his priorities are doing what's right for the people of Wisconsin. You know, I think there are, you know, a number of politicians who, you know, to win re-election the way he did by a more significant margin and, you know, have been very successful, to really feel like they have a mandate. And, you know, despite what Republicans said about, you know, this is like red meat for the base, the governor went in with a really thoughtful set of proposals to talk about that meet the needs of Wisconsinites now. And those are things that everyone should be able to agree on. You know, this is, I thought centering the speech so much on mental health was incredibly smart and incredibly important for the people of Wisconsin. You know, it's a half a billion, so $500 million, more than half of that, $270 million is targeted to kids in schools. And the rest is going to other opportunities to help support mental and behavioral health. I know there's a carve out for veterans and for others. And that's something that we've heard about, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country, is that, you know, we have a mental health crisis, and it existed before the pandemic. It, I would say, has probably gotten worse throughout the pandemic. We have kids who have missed a lot of school. We have kids who have missed social opportunities, and adults as well. And people are really struggling. And that's something that impacts kids' ability to learn. It impacts people's interpersonal relationships. It impacts your, you know, somebody's ability to be present and do a great job at work. So I thought that was a really smart way to anchor the speech, and to, you know, talk about something that is supposed to have bipartisan support. You would think it was, but, you know, Republicans have taken opportunities to be against mental health funding in the past. Kind of a very notable example of that was when they shut down the opportunity to fund mental health services for farmers. And they voted Senator Brad Papp, who was then the head of the Ag Department, voted him out of his job because of that, because he was fighting for mental health support for farmers. So, you know, I thought that was a really smart way for the governor to lead the speech, was on mental health.
And I don't think that the Republicans have changed one iota, because Speaker Robin Voss, he did this, you know, on his own, on his Twitter feed. He answered a snarky text from, I want to say it was Wisconsin Right Now, about mental health, and somehow implying that it was all Evers' fault, and talking about all the mental health things. And Speaker Voss put that up with, and he put on there, never going to happen, or, you know, something like that. And I thought, that's how you respond to all of the mental health challenges, that you just right there say, never going to happen. But I suppose it's pretty related to his attitude about everything, saying, you know, we're just going to tear it all down and start again. And for folks who aren't familiar with the process, this is amazingly disrespectful, that at any given point prior to this, you know, the legislative party would at least give a governor the respect of looking through some of their ideas. But this batch of Republicans does not have the dignity to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even in the governor's first budget, and I worked for him at the time, the governor put some of the Republicans' own ideas from the previous session, some of their previous bills, including some homelessness proposals, he put their own bills into his first budget, and they still took them out. So, you know, this is, they really just don't want to work with the governor. They don't want to see him get a win, or the perception of a win, even though, you know, funding mental health resources for veterans, for first responders, you know, this is, Republicans say they're the party of supporting police and firefighters. Well, you know, there are definitely mental health crises among first responders. And when they've got an opportunity to fund programming, they're saying no. So, you know, they really just, I think, would rather no one win than Governor Evers get to share in a win. And that's really unfortunate for the people of Wisconsin.
And always,
I think that the governor,
I was going to say, and always the brinksmanship, because again, they're still clinging to this flat tax proposal as if there's a prayer that something like that would come in. So why start from such an extreme position?
You know, I think that part of the reason is, like I said, they just don't want the governor to get a win. You know, and like you said, that flat tax proposal is dead on arrival. But I think the big thing is that they are in complete disarray. You know, they don't have a message. They don't have an agenda. They don't have anything that they want to do other than not what Tony Evers said is their only plan. You know, they've got this dead on arrival flat tax. They've got an advisory referendum going on the spring ballot on legislation they passed years ago. And then like they've got a bill going around to ban free cheese, like, you know, that's not even, you know, being given out, you know. So it's just very odd what their priorities are. And I think it's because they have a lack of priorities. They don't have an agenda and they are in complete disarray.
Well, again, if Governor Evers is for it, we have to be against it, which makes me wonder, since the governor has said, hey, you've got this intriguing idea with the sales tax of using 20% of it going to local governments. Let's take a look at that. Now, much like Republicans in Congress did with the Affordable Care Act, which was in many ways started with some Republican ideas, I'm wondering if they're going to oppose their own idea of the sales tax just because Governor Evers is saying, hey, let's look at it.
I mean, it sounds like that's where they're headed, you know, which just boggles the mind. You know, they also, you know, I think are going to be against this, you know, workforce programming, I would assume, that the governor is talking about. It's, you know, nearly $200 million in programming and funding to help support growing and training and retaining our workforce. That's something that was incredibly effective under the governor's leadership in disbursing federal funds, you know, getting these Main Street bounce back grants out and supporting local businesses and entrepreneurs. You know, the governor wants to try to replicate some of those programs and try some additional programs in the budget. And what are Republicans going to do? Do they actually care about supporting businesses or do they not?
Melissa, let's in our couple of minutes left here, turn to the state Supreme Court race, because the New York Times has done another article about it with the headline, 2023's biggest, most unusual race centers on abortion and democracy. And then the subhead really gets to me. It talks about the stakes, but then it says cash is pouring in. And some of the candidates have shed any pretense of judicial neutrality. Well, what do you mean some of the candidates? We all know where everybody is on this race, which is what has made it so important.
Exactly. I think that's, you hit the nail on the head, is that there's so much at stake here. You know, this election will decide the balance of the court. And there are some incredibly important cases that will come before this court. You know, when you talk about abortion rights, when you talk about voting rights, our maps, you know, this is one of the, you know, the biggest challenges facing our state, is that we have a legislature that is not actually representative of the people of Wisconsin. So to have the opportunity to actually draw fair maps means that we could have a legislature that will accept federal funds to expand Medicaid, that will support the governor in investing in mental health and investing in our schools, investing in our workforce. So, you know, the stakes, you know, couldn't be any higher. And I think it's important for people to know where the candidates stand, and to know what their beliefs are and what their opinions are.
And there's no doubt we're going to get that, along with a slew of ads that misrepresent where some of the candidates' positions are, because, because that's what political commercials do. So I hope that in visits like this with you and with Joe, we can help people get some factual information on the candidates. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much for the time. It was great to visit with you, and we'll look forward to talking to your Jay-Z again sometime soon.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
And while we were playing that interview back, we did get one caller who wanted to ask why Governor Evers didn't say more about abortion rights in the state of the state. And I think related to the, you know, the tone of the conversation, Governor Evers was trying not to be confrontational in his remarks. He was actually saying to them, hey, here's a sales tax plan that I might be willing to consider. And they already know that this is beyond the legislature. The abortion rights fight is now in court with a case that the governor and Attorney General Josh Call have brought. And of course, the real balance of power there is in that state Supreme Court race that comes up with a February 21st primary and an April 4th general election. And just yesterday, I went online to myvote.wi.gov and applied to have absentee ballots sent to me for both elections so I can fill those out and mail them back in. And you should too, myvote.wi.gov. We will talk to Dr. Kristen Lierley. And then in our next hour, she and I will talk to Senator Tammy Baldwin about the fight for abortion rights and better mental health care and more. But first, this day in music history, you're up north. It was on this day in 1973 that Elton John released his sixth studio album, Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player. It included this little ditty. We need a better background singer for it, so we brought Kristen Lierley on board.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
Also good.
I don't know the words.
Oh, come on. You're not that young. You are not.
All right. No, I mean, I know the song. I know, you have to get to the...
I was tempted to cue it up to that, but maybe I should have. Anyway, how are you this morning?
I'm so good. It's going to be such a great day, Pat. I mean, we're talking to Tammy Baldwin. We're celebrating CRNA week. Like, what an amazing Thursday we're going to have.
It is, and it's going to be very busy, and I'm glad you wanted to start it with a little bit of history. So getting back to Elton John, Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, also was known for Daniel. And Crocodile Rock was Elton's first number one hit in America. On this day in 1970, the Simon & Garfunkel album Bridge Over Troubled Water was released. On this day in 1980, Prince performed on American Bandstand and really didn't have much to say, so we don't have a clip from that. Because
can we sing some Prince?
You can always sing some Prince, by all means.
Raspberry Beret. Mm-hmm, yeah, the kind you find in a secondhand store. Come on, Aaron.
Well, see, I don't want to be completely desynced, but I do love that song.
See, we can always blame the internet delay. We have a birth anniversary, and we're going to play the guitar solo behind us from Jump. Eddie Van Halen was born on this day in 1955. So it would have been his 68th birthday, but we lost him a couple of years ago, arguably the greatest guitar player ever.
Brilliant.
So we will always have all of those solos to listen back to. It was on this day in 1997, I say to Dr. Lierley, who is a stone's throw away from Lambeau Field. On this day in 1997, the Green Bay Packers won Super Bowl 31 in New Orleans, beating the New England Patriots 35-21.
Yeah, that baby.
That was a good day.
Oh, it was such a good day. And it was the Patriots, who I hate. So it was like even better.
And while we're talking about this day in music history, the halftime show for that game was ZZ Top, James Brown, and the Blues Brothers.
What a halftime show.
It was really something. It was also noteworthy, the game, not just for Favre's 81-yard touchdown pass to Antonio Freeman, which was then a Super Bowl record, but Desmond Howard returned a kickoff for a then Super Bowl record 99 yards for a touchdown, making him the first special teams player ever to be named the Super Bowl MVP.
Oh, that was a fun game, wasn't it? For a Super Bowl game? Wow.
Good time. Well, and again, it was in you know, Brett Favre's best years, you know, before he went down the diva path, the same one that the guy that followed him appears to be going down right now. It was such a more innocent time, wasn't it?
Yeah, those were our glory days.
The very next year, Edwin McCain released the single, I'll Be. I never understood that one line. This is a beautiful song. It's a romantic song. It's probably been played at, you know, arguably a million weddings. And then that line in the chorus, I'll be love's suicide.
What? I always just assumed I was mishearing it.
I always did too. And then I looked and I was like, no, that's actually the lyric. And I'm like, but what does he mean by that? So
isn't it funny how we do that? We just sing what we think it is and it doesn't make any sense at all, but it's coming out sounding the right way in our mouth.
Oh, yeah, there's a bathroom on the right. Yeah, we all do that with various lyrics. On this day in 2006, Garth Brooks' double live album became the first live album to be certified double diamond for sales of over 20 million. This is the Garth Brooks double live album was released in 1998. So we are talking 8 years later on this day, it reached 20 million in sales. And I think I probably have it too. And I don't have a lot of country albums, but I'm pretty sure that one's in there. Mm-hmm. Finally, 2010 on this day. So, oh my gosh, 2010, is it really 13 years ago already? Lady Antebellum, now known as Lady A, releases their second album, Need You Now, with this title track. It went to number one, and that album sold over 4 million copies and gave everybody the excuse for late night texting, just to put in that line, I'm a little drunk and I need you now, which is the country lyric equivalent to you up.
Pat.
I know things. I read things. I know what kids do nowadays. More or less.
How often have you texted that to Sherry when she's on call?
Never, because that's just cruel when you have to you send that note to somebody who's working all night and, you know, they can't interrupt things. How are you? Are you doing any travels? We're in the off season, so it's not like you're going over to Lambeau for a Packer game or anything. And oh, didn't you have like a big game night with your boys this week?
Oh, we did. We had bro night because all
bro
my boys
night.
Were in
that
town.
Was it. Yes.
So we got burritos and we played board games and they were all over the place. One wandered off and started playing his drums and another one picked up a yo-yo. And there was just like so much laughter. We were making up Scrabble words and it wasn't really about the games. It was just about just being together, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. It really is about just the time you're spending with your family more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, good. I'm glad I could get a little happy news out of you before I turned over to back to the news headlines and such. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the state's Republican Attorney General said this week that the state will prosecute and threaten to jail pharmacists who dispense abortion-inducing pills following a recent FDA rule change that broadens access to the pills. The governor released a letter to South Dakota pharmacists saying they are subject to felony prosecution if they dispense such drugs. The state bans all abortions except to save the life of the pregnant person. Noem said South Dakota will continue to enforce all laws, including those that respect and protect the lives of the unborn. You know, women be damned. Which is apparently where we're at now, is threatening to jail pharmacists. Because why not? The Florida governor is threatening to jail school librarians for having certain books in. So,
well, they had a legislator who actually threatened, told the University of South Dakota to fire their one physician who provides gender-affirming care, but is also their only infertility doc in the entire state. This legislator told the university to fire this person who is highly regarded in the OBGYN world. Like, a legislator is now saying that they can fire faculty and physicians. What the hell?
Well, that is where we're in now, in this near authoritarianism of a party that will, you know, do whatever is necessary to win elections through fear or by fraud. And then that same party that says we're for smaller government then shows it to all be a lie that right. In fact they want government even bigger in terms of what they can do to throw people in jail if they don't like who they're dealing with. Kristen Lyerly and I are going to talk about more headlines and then talk about CRNAs and then Senator Tammy Baldwin all in our next hour. You're up north.